Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, April 25th, 2006. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up this morning, Governor Ted Kulongoski officially declared a state of emergency for coastal communities affected by the near shutdown of commercial salmon fishing. Donald Rumsfeld has approved the military's most ambitious plan yet for fighting the so-called global war on terror. And three bombings at an Egyptian resort town killed 23 people. Portland area weather, mostly clear this morning, clouding over later today. Chance of showers in the afternoon or evening. Temperatures in the 60s to low 70s. Tonight, chance of showers, temperatures in the high 30s to low 40s.
Governor Ted Kulongoski declared a state of emergency yesterday for coastal communities affected by the near shutdown of commercial salmon fishing this summer over poor Chinook returns to California's Klamath River. This from the Salem Statesman Journal. The executive order directs state agencies to do what they can for salmon fishermen in coastal communities, such as developing some fishing opportunities in state waters, offering training for new careers, and providing unemployment benefits. The declaration is also a required step in seeking a federal economic disaster declaration for commercial salmon fishermen, who landed $13 million worth of salmon in Oregon last year. Federal fisheries managers this month recommended practically shutting down commercial salmon fishing along 700 miles of coast from Cape Falcon in Oregon near the Columbia River to Point Sur near Monterey, California. In Oregon, there is unlikely to be any fishing south of Florence and a small fraction of normal season north of Florence. Final action on the seasons is expected by the end of the month from the U.S. Department of Commerce. For the third year in a row, returns of wildfowl Chinook to the Klamath River are projected to be below the minimum set in federal management plans for spawning a new generation.
Kettle Foods has been slapped with a civil penalty of more than $12,000 for discharging prohibited waste into Salem's sewer system and related violations of its local potato chip plant. According to the Statesman Journal, an investigation by city staff found a Kettle employee was intentionally pumping the contents of a pretreatment clarifier into the sewer. The pumping bypassing equipment that monitored discharges and allowed cooking oils and solids from the food processing operation to enter the sewer system. In addition, the city found the company could only produce records of effluent flows for the previous 21 days, not the five-year period required by city rules. Kettle Foods officials blamed a mistake by the workers who were upgrading a wastewater treatment system for the unauthorized discharge into the sewer.
The state of Oregon went to court yesterday to collect all the money it says it is due under a 1998 settlement of lawsuits against tobacco companies. The state says $14 million is at stake in the dispute. The tobacco companies contended they have lost market shares as a result of the settlement, which cost them $246 billion in payments to 46 states. Under the settlement, the companies argue they can set aside part of their payments if they lose market share. The state, however, said in its lawsuit filed in Multnomah County, the big tobacco companies cannot withhold money so long as the state sues smaller companies that didn't join the settlement. Those companies were supposed to put money in an escrow fund intended to spread the payments more evenly among tobacco companies. The tobacco companies made their annual payments last week, and Oregon got $9 million less than the $75 million it expected.
Some workers who chose early retirement when Hewlett-Packard cut jobs in Corvallis may have found that they're not eligible for unemployment benefits. One said he has been ordered to repay $7,000 he had collected. The company reduced its Corvallis workforce by more than 700 as part of a worldwide cost-cutting move that aims to slash 14,500 jobs. HP offered two severance packages, one of which was an early retirement package for workers over 50 with at least 15 years at HP. It included paid insurance coverage for several months. Two who took early retirement said they were shocked this spring when the State Employment Department cut their unemployment benefits, judging that they had quit without good cause. They said those who took the regular severance package qualified for unemployment benefits. This from the Corvallis Gazette-Times.
Three more Lane County school districts are among a dozen more around the state that have signed on to a lawsuit alleging that state lawmakers have neglected their constitutional duty to sufficiently fund schools. The Creswell, McKenzie, and Siuslaw school districts joined the original plaintiffs in the suit. The original plaintiffs were Eugene, Crow Applegate, Lorraine, Coos Bay, Corvallis, Pendleton, and the Three Rivers District, along with three families from Portland, Ashland, and Hillsborough. In addition to the three Lane County districts, new to the lawsuit are the Reynolds, Astoria, Amity, Park Rose, Lincoln County, Pine Eagle, Coquille, Centennial, and Jefferson 14J districts. This from the Eugene Registered Guard.
Governor Kulongoski has signed Jessica's Law, a measure that increases criminal penalties for sexual predators who victimize young children. The bill passed during last week's special legislation session. The new law increases mandatory minimum sentences for offenders convicted of first-degree rape, sodomy, or unlawful penetration if the victim is under 12. The new law sets the minimum sentence at 25 years. It also requires the state to supervise such offenders actively for 10 years after their sentences and to track them for the rest of their lives. Oregon is one of nearly two dozen states that have passed some version of Jessica's Law.
If you want to cast a ballot in the May 16th primary, you must register to vote by today. County election offices will accept postcard registrations if they are postmarked by April 25th. You must re-register if you have changed your name, address, or party affiliation. Only registered Democrats can choose Democratic nominees in a primary under Oregon law, and only registered Republicans can choose Republican nominees. All voters may vote on nonpartisan candidates and ballot measures. New registration cards require voters to list either their Oregon driver's license number or the final four digits of their Social Security number as proof of residency. The 2002 federal law imposed a requirement. The law does not require voters to re-register if they have no changes to report. Registered voters may update their registrations after the deadline under certain conditions. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Former CEO Ken Lay took the stand today in the Enron trial in Houston. He appeared eager to assign responsibility for the collapse of Enron to others, namely the, quote, deceit and activity of Andy Fastow, unquote, short sellers, who, according to Lay, conspired in early 2000 to make Enron their number one target, and the Wall Street Journal, who Lay claims had information even Enron didn't have in October of 2001, just 3 months before bankruptcy. When asked by his attorney, Max Seacrest, if he took any responsibility, Lay responded, "I accept all responsibility for everything that happened at Enron. I can't accept responsibility for illegal activity I had no knowledge of," unquote. Lay faces 6 counts of conspiracy, securities, and wire fraud with a maximum 60-year sentence, and a second personal bank fraud trial to begin 2 hours after this jury begins deliberation. From KPFT, I'm Lisa Cohen.
That was FSRN's Lisa Cohen reporting on the Ken Lay trial.
A U.S. District Court judge today ordered a jury to keep deliberating the fate of a Lodi man facing federal terrorism-related charges after jurors said they could not reach a verdict. Umar Haywat, a 48-year-old ice cream vendor, is charged with lying to the FBI agents to protect his son, who is also on trial before a separate jury on charges that he attended an al-Qaeda training camp in Pakistan. The juries have been considering their fate for nearly 2 weeks after a 9-week trial. Today, Umar Haywat jury said it could not reach a unanimous decision that prompted the judge to send it back for more deliberations.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has approved the military's most ambitious plan yet to fight terrorism around the world and retaliate more rapidly and decisively in the case of another major terrorist attack on the United States, according to the Washington Post. The plan for a global war on terrorism, as well as two subordinate plans also approved within the past month by Rumsfeld, are considered the Pentagon's highest priority. Details of the plans are secret, but in general they envision a significantly expanded role for the military, and in particular, a growing force of elite special operation troops in continuous operations to combat terrorism outside of war zones such as Iraq and Afghanistan. Developed over about 3 years by Special Operations Command in Tampa, the plan reflects a beefing up of the Pentagon's involvement in domains traditionally handled by the Central Intelligence Agency and the State Department, and in a subtle but important shift contained in a classified order last year, the Pentagon gained the leeway to inform rather than gain the approval of the U.S. ambassador before conducting military operations in a foreign country. Overall, the plans underscore Rumsfeld's conviction since the September 2001 terrorist attacks that the U.S. military must expand its mission beyond 20th century conventional warfare to fight non-state groups that are, above all, difficult to find.
And President Bush is under pressure to do something about gasoline prices that are expected to stay high through the summer. Bush has ordered an investigation into possible cheating in the markets. During the last few days, Bush asked his Energy and Justice Departments to open inquiries into whether the price of gasoline has been illegally manipulated.
The Illinois General Assembly is about to use a little-known rule of the U.S. House to bring impeachment charges against President Bush. Members of state legislatures are normally not considered as having the ability to decide issues with a massive impact to the nation as a whole. They will use Section 603 of Jefferson's Manual of the Rules of the United States of House of Representatives. It allows federal impeachment proceedings to be initiated by joint resolution of a state legislature. From there, Illinois' House Joint Resolution 125, hereafter to be referred to as HJR-0125, was born. The legislature brings five specific charges against President Bush, including one that is specified to be a felony. It is charged that the NSA was directed by the president to spy on American citizens without warrant, and it is not in dispute. That fact should prove an interesting dilemma for a Republican-controlled U.S. House that clearly is not only loath to initiate impeachment proceedings, but does not even want to thoroughly investigate any of the five items brought up by the Illinois Assembly as high crimes and/or misdemeanors. Should H.J.R. 0125 be passed by the Illinois General Assembly, the U.S. House will be forced by House rules to take up the issue of impeachment as a privileged bill, meaning it will take precedence over other House business.
A federal lawsuit filed yesterday claims the Defense Department is violating the privacy of millions of high school students nationwide with the detailed database it uses for military recruitment. The New York Civil Liberties Union sued on behalf of six high schoolers, saying the department is ignoring privacy rules set by Congress regarding the collection and distribution of students' personal information. Military officials have said they have about 30 million names in the database. The Pentagon said last year the list includes high school students ages 16 to 18 and college students, and includes such information as the students' social security numbers, gender, and race. The department is flouting a 1982 military recruitment law that specifies that it refrained from collecting information on students under 17, that it store the information for no more than 3 years, and that the information be kept private, the lawsuit said. The current database includes information on 16-year-olds, is storing the information for 5 years, and is being shared with law enforcement and other agencies.
Lieutenant Governor and Mayor of Los Angeles, both Hispanic Democrats, have received threats amid a national debate over immigration policy. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger told reporters about the threats against Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante during a news conference in his office yesterday. Other elected officials of Mexican heritage have also received threats. Bustamante and Villaraigosa have opposed the criminalization of illegal immigrants and have said they support legal pathways to helping undocumented workers become citizens. Schwarzenegger said he also was disturbed that vandals had spray-painted ethnic insults on and torched a Mexican-owned restaurant in San Diego County this month. Officials ruled the April 10th attack a hate crime. The governor has said he opposes amnesty for illegal immigrants, but he also called a massive deportation of the estimated 11 million foreigners living illegally in the U.S. as unrealistic.
In Kansas, five teenage boys were charged yesterday with threatening to carry out a shooting spree at their high school on the anniversary of the Columbine bloodbath. Each was charged with incitement to riot and making a criminal threat. A judge set bail at $50,000 for Charles New, 18, who was charged as an adult. The four others were charged as juveniles and ordered held for a May 3rd hearing. The incitement charge carries 7 to 23 months in jail, and the criminal threat charge is punishable by 5 to 17 months behind bars. The punishment is the same for adults and juveniles. The teenagers were arrested last Thursday, the 7th anniversary of the Columbine High School massacre in Colorado, after a message about the alleged plot appeared on the website MySpace.com.
Mary McCarthy, who is nearing retirement at the CIA, has been identified as being fired after leaking information that resulted in the story last year in the Washington Post disclosing a network of secret CIA prisons in Eastern Europe. The Post won a Pulitzer Prize last week for its report. One law enforcement official said last week that dozens of leak investigations were underway. Justice Department officials would not comment publicly on the CIA firing or say if the matter had been referred to prosecutors for possible criminal charges. Speaking to the Anti-Defamation League yesterday in Washington, National Intelligence Director John Negroponte did not mention the firing of the CIA officer. A reporter shouted a question to him about the issue as he left, but he did not stop to reply. Negroponte has condemned leaks in the past.
And seven car bombs killed at least eight people and wounded dozens in Baghdad yesterday as talks continue over the formation of a new government. FSRN's David Enders reports.
The attacks came after a weekend during which some Iraqis expressed cautious optimism that the new prime minister-designate, Jawad al-Maliki, might be sincere and able in his promises to rein in sectarian violence. But in a show of the power of newly formed militias, it was announced today that people in Al-Damiyah, the Sunni neighborhood in North Baghdad that saw heavy fighting last week, had reached an agreement with the Iraqi army that the neighborhood's militia would not attack the army as long as the army agreed to prevent the Iraqi police, who are viewed by people in the neighborhood as little more than Shiite death squads, from entering. In Baghdad, I'm David Enders reporting for FSRN.
Three nearly simultaneous bombings hit an Egyptian beach resort popular with foreigners yesterday at the height of tourism season. At least 23 people were killed. The bomber struck the Sana'a city of Dahab in the early evening along a crowded promenade of shops, restaurants, and bars. Interior Minister Habib El-Aldi said those killed include 20 Egyptians and three foreigners. 62 people were wounded. The explosions, the third terror strike on a Sana'a resort in less than 2 years, hit Dahab when the streets were jammed with tourists strolling, shopping, or looking for a restaurant or bar for evening festivities by the tranquil waters of the Gulf of Aqaba. Hotels and guest houses were filled with foreigners, and with Egyptians celebrating the long Coptic Christian Easter weekend that coincided this year with Shem al-Nessim, the Asian holiday marking the first day of spring. For years, Dahab was a popular low-key haven for young Western and Israeli backpackers drawn by prime scuba diving and cheap hotels, which mainly consist of huts set up along the beach. In recent years, a number of more upscale hotels have been built, including a five-star Hilton resort.
Nepal's embattled king appeared to defuse weeks of mass protests that have pushed his Himalayan country near the brink of anarchy, reinstating the lower house of parliament yesterday as his opponents had demanded. Gyendra's announcement cleared the way for the creation of a new constitution that could leave him largely powerless or even eliminate the monarchy. Gyendra also expressed his sympathies for the 14 demonstrators killed by security forces in nearly 3 weeks of protest. Nepal's three largest opposition parties welcomed the king's comments, and the sound of celebratory shouts and whistles could be heard in the streets of Kathmandu minutes after the 11:30 p.m. speech. Amid the increasing chaos, the State Department earlier yesterday ordered all non-emergency embassy staff and family members to leave Nepal, according to an embassy spokesman. The king's address effectively handed power back to the elected politicians hours before the largest planned protest yet. With hundreds of thousands of people expected to attend, the seven parties plan to meet Tuesday to call off protests.
A former Iranian ambassador and Islamic Republic insider has provided intriguing details to Asia Times Online about U.S. covert operations inside Iran aimed at destabilizing the country and toppling the regime, or preparing for an American attack. There have been a marked spike in unrest in Kurdistan, Khuzestan, and Balochistan, three of Iran's provinces with a high concentration of ethnic Kurdish, Arab, and Balochali minorities, respectively, with the exception of the immediate post-revolutionary period, when the Kurds rebelled against the central government and were suppressed violently. Ethnic minorities have received better treatment, more autonomy, and less ethnic discrimination than under the Shah. Camp Warhorse is the major U.S. military base in the strategic Iraqi province of Diyala that borders Iran. Last month, Asia Times Online asked the U.S. official in charge of all overt and covert operations emanating from there whether the military and the MEC colluded on an operational level. He denied any such knowledge. But according to Seymour Hersh, U.S. combat troops are already inside Iran and in the event of airstrikes would be in position to mark critical targets with laser beams to ensure bombing accuracy and excite sectarian tensions between the population and the central government.
The World Bank has been accused of deception and medical malpractice by a group of public health doctors for failing to carry out its funding promises and wrongfully claiming its programs have been successful at cutting the death toll from the disease, this according to The Guardian. The serious charges are leveled by Amir Attaran, a professor at the Institute of Population Health and Faculty of Law of Ottawa University, and colleagues from around the world. Writing in an online publication for the Lancet Medical Journal, they say the World Bank is unfit to lead global efforts to control the disease, which kills around 1 million people a year, most of them small children. They argue that the World Bank has not delivered the $300 to $500 million in funding it promised to Africa when it launched the ambitious global rollback malaria campaign in 1998. The campaign was intended to have malaria deaths this decade. They add that it has not been open about the amounts it is spending on malaria and that it has been wasted money and endangered lives by allowing countries to buy malaria drugs that no longer work. In response, also published online, the bank acknowledges that it should have done more in the past but says its current programs are well-funded, well-staffed, and delivering results.
After weeks of stalled negotiations, Japan has agreed to pay almost 60% of the cost of transferring thousands of U.S. Marines from Okinawa to Guam, according to The Guardian. The move is designed to reduce the U.S.'s military burden on one of its closest allies. Japan's Defense Minister, Fukushiro Nakaga, announced the deal after more than 3 hours of talks in Washington on Sunday with the U.S. Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld.
More than 1,000 Iraqis who live south of Baghdad within the bombed and looted complex that was once the center of Saddam Hussein's nuclear program are at acute risk of radioactive poisoning. The Vienna-based International Atomic Energy Agency said it was launching a cleanup operation at the Tuatha plant, 14 miles south of Baghdad, and appealed for international involvement in what it said would be a long-term challenge. The Tuatha complex was at the center of Saddam's illicit nuclear projects. Although it was thoroughly investigated and largely dismantled during the UN inspections of the 1990s. The Americans, citing the threat of Saddam's weapons of mass destruction as ground for their invasion and occupation in 2003, came under severe criticism for failing to secure the complex and standing by while it was ransacked. Tuatha was bombed by the invaders and then looted by Iraqis. Uranium drums were emptied and sold, and the empty barrels used to hold water. Around 1,000 people are now living in a village within the perimeter of the nuclear complex, according to the IAEA, and levels of radiation are known to be higher than normal, and prolonged exposure could prove risky over time.
President Hu Jintao of China has begun a long week visit to Africa, his second tour of the continent since becoming leader 3 years ago. The trip has started in Morocco, where the president will sign a number of trade deals with King Mohammed VI. President Hu will also visit Kenya and make a return trip to Nigeria, which he visited in 2004, a tour that also included Gabon and Algeria. Hu comes fresh from meetings in the United States and Saudi Arabia. The visit indicates the importance China is attaching to securing energy and trade deals in the region, says the BBC's David Bamford. Hu's message will be that China and Africa have become natural partners. China has an expanding economy eager for oil, gas, cotton, cobalt, and timber, while Africa has plentiful natural resources but needs help to exploit them, our correspondent says. President Hu's visit comes in the wake of a series of others by Chinese ministers and officials. They have been crisscrossing the continent from Egypt and Algeria to South Africa and Zambia to set up or sign oil deals. This from the BBC.
The Indonesian Attorney General is to ask doctors to re-examine former President Suharto to see whether he is fit to stand trial. The 84-year-old Suharto has been suffering from ill health since his forced resignation in 1998 after 32 years in power. He was indicted for alleged corruption, but in 2000, a court deemed him unfit to stand trial due to a series of strokes. Opposition figures and human rights groups have persistently accused the general of corruption and human rights abuses during his decades in power. The attorney general said a team of 20 would be asked to re-examine Suharto. He told reporters he might consider unspecified other options if doctors concluded the former president was not well enough to face any proceedings. There has been an indication as to what, if any, charges a former president might face. In 2000, judges dismissed a $600 million corruption case on the grounds of ill health. This from the BBC.
A campaigner who risked his own safety to expose illegal logging operations in Liberia have been recognized with a prestigious environmental award. Silas Sayakor has won a Goldman Environmental Prize for his efforts, which resulted in the UN banning the export of Liberian timber. The awards are described as the Nobel Prize for the grassroots environmentalism. Working for the Liberian environmental group Save My Future Foundation, SAMFU, Sayakor revealed in 2002 that President Charles Taylor's regime was selling off the nation's forests to timber companies. It is understood that warring factions in the region turned to logging after the trade in so-called blood diamonds became subject to UN sanctions. According to the United Nations Environmental Program, illegal logging during the 14 years of civil war have reduced the nation's forest cover by almost one-fifth. What started as a simple exchange of material amongst a small group of people soon formed the basis of a report which caught the attention of the international community. The publicity surrounding the report angered the government. Evidence contained in the report had led the UN Security Council banning the export of timber from Liberia, which had an impact on the funds available to the warring factions in the civil war.
And according to the BBC, Athens police have fired tear gas during a clash with anti-war demonstrators protesting against a visit by U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Some protesters hurled petrol bombs, sticks, and stones in return. Rice is meeting Greek Prime Minister Kostas Kazantzakis as part of a five-day trip to Europe that also includes Turkey and Bulgaria. Thousands of protesters are said to have gathered in Athens. Some 5,000 riot police have been deployed. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, April 18, 2006, Holocaust Remembrance Day. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO news and newsroom volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Liam Delta is our engineer this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is AM News and Public Affairs Director. And I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartleson.
And thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM. In Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. And you want to know what goes on into the KBOO Morning News? You can volunteer in the AM newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202. Portland area weather, mostly clear this morning, clouding over later today, chance of showers in the afternoon or evening, and temperatures in the low 60s to low 70s. Tonight, chance of showers, temperatures in the high 30s to low 40s.